In the Artibonite Valley, on the last day of March 2026, 16 people were killed by a gang called Grand Griff. 16. In a region that grows most of Haiti's food, in a country where armed groups now control more than 80% of the capital, the United Nations Security Council called it a crisis. The same United Nations Security Council that has been calling Haiti a crisis since 2004, since 2010, since 2021. Since the president was assassinated in his own bedroom at 3 a.m. by Colombian mercenaries and a handful of Haitian ex-officers, and nobody has been convicted, there is a number I want to tell you about. I will come back to it. The story of Haiti does not begin in 2026. It does not begin with gangs or with guns or with the word failed state, which foreign newspapers have been applying to this country for so long that they have forgotten they had a hand in making it fail. The story begins in August of 1791, in a ceremony at a place called Bois-Caiman, when enslaved people in the French colony of Saint-Domingue made a decision that changed the modern world. They decided to be free. What followed was the only successful slave revolution in recorded history. 500,000 enslaved Africans, men and women who had been worked to death on sugar and coffee plantations under a French colonial system so brutal that the average enslaved person on Saint-Domingue did not live 7 years after arriving, rose up. They fought the French. They fought the Spanish. They fought the British. They fought Napoleon Bonaparte's professional army, a force that had conquered most of Europe. And they defeated it. On the 1st of January, 1804, they declared the Republic of Haiti, the first black nation in the Western Hemisphere, the first country in history founded by formerly enslaved people. The Western world did not celebrate this. The United States, which had itself declared independence from colonial rule just 28 years earlier, refused to recognize Haiti for 58 years. The slaveholding states of the American South were terrified that the idea of Haiti, that enslaved people could rise up, win, and build a nation, would spread. France, which had lost its most profitable colony, was furious. Britain watched the Atlantic trading system reconfigure itself around a black republic and did not know what to do. So the world waited Haiti out, sent no trade agreements, sent no diplomats, sent no recognition. And then, in 1825, France did something that historians are still processing. It sent warships. This is the number I mentioned. I want you to hold it. France anchored 14 warships off the coast of Port-au-Prince in 1825 and delivered an ultimatum through its consul. Recognize France's losses from the revolution, meaning compensate the French slaveholders who had lost their enslaved people when those people freed themselves, or face reinvasion and a blockade that would strangle Haiti's economy until it collapsed. Haiti's president, faced with this choice, agreed. The sum France demanded was 90 million gold francs. In return, France would grant diplomatic recognition and allow Haitian goods access to French and European markets. Haiti borrowed money from French banks to make the first payment. Then it kept paying. And paying. And paying. 122 years. From 1825 to 1947, Haiti paid the French indemnity. With interest, with refinanced loans, with money it did not have, to compensate the people who had enslaved its founders. Economists who have studied this debt, including a team whose work was published by the New York Times in 2022 in a 4-year investigation called The Ransom, calculated that the total transferred, adjusted to modern dollars, falls somewhere between $21 billion and $115 billion, depending on the methodology. France has never formally acknowledged the amount as a debt it owes Haiti in return. French officials, when pressed, have called the methodology contestable. The payments themselves are not contested. They happened. The receipts exist. What does 122 years of debt service do to a country? It does exactly what debt service always does. It crowds out everything else. Haiti could not build schools because it was paying France. It could not build hospitals because it was paying French banks. Every year that the Haitian government needed to build a road or a water system or a port, it had less money to do so, because a portion of its national budget was already committed, by treaty, to the nation that had enslaved its people and then demanded payment for losing them. In 1915, with Haiti's government weakened by internal instability and the debt burden of the indemnity and its refinanced successors, the United States Marines landed in Port-au-Prince. Woodrow Wilson's administration justified the occupation using the Monroe Doctrine, the American right to intervene in the Western Hemisphere, and the stated concern about European influence. The United States occupied Haiti for 19 years. It controlled Haiti's customs revenues. It rewrote Haiti's constitution. It used Haitian laborers to build infrastructure that primarily benefited American commercial interests. When Haitian peasants resisted, the Marines killed them. Estimates of Haitian deaths during the occupation range from 3,000 to 15,000. The Marines left in 1934. They left behind a trained military and a system of governance designed for extraction, not for the Haitian people. Then came François Duvalier, Papa Doc, a physician who understood the Haitian peasantry well enough to weaponize their cultural symbols. He wore black, like the lower Baron Sambi, and created an armed militia called the Tonton Macoutes that operated outside the regular military and reported directly to him. He ruled through terror from 1957 to 1971. His son Jean-Claude, Baby Doc, inherited the presidency at 19 years old and ruled until 1986, when the Haitian population finally forced him into exile in France, where he lived comfortably until his death in 2014. After Baby Doc, Haiti held elections. More than 30 governments in 30 years. A succession of leaders, coups, electoral disputes, and international interventions. Jean-Bertrand Aristide was elected twice and removed twice. The second time in 2004, with the involvement of France, the United States, and Canada, who airlifted him out of the country in the middle of the night. He has always said it was a kidnapping. The governments that removed him have always said it was a resignation. Then came January 12, 2010. The earthquake killed more than 300,000 people. It displaced 1.5 million. It destroyed the National Palace, the Parliament Building, the Tax Authority, the Ministry of Justice. International aid arrived, billions of dollars in pledged funds, most of which went through international NGOs rather than the Haitian government, most of which was never fully accounted for. And in October 2010, cholera appeared in Haiti for the first time in recorded history. It spread from a river. United Nations investigators later confirmed that Nepalese peacekeepers, UN troops stationed in Haiti after the earthquake, had introduced the pathogen when their sewage waste was improperly discharged into the Artibonite River. Cholera killed more than 10,000 Haitians over the following decade and infected 800,000 more. The United Nations, after initially denying responsibility, eventually acknowledged a moral responsibility and established a victims fund. The fund raised less than 1% of its target. The number from 1825, the indemnity Haiti paid until 1947. Imagine if that money had stayed in Haiti. Imagine hospitals in the Artibonite Valley, funded with that capital. Imagine a public health system capable of containing a cholera outbreak in 2010. Imagine a government with enough institutional depth to survive the assassination of a president. On July 7, 2021, President Jovenel Moïse was shot 21 times in his private residence by a team of hitmen that included Colombian ex-military and Haitian Americans with connections to security contractor networks. As of 2026, 5 years later, no one has been convicted of ordering the assassination. The suspected mastermind was extradited to the United States and died in a Miami jail while awaiting trial. Haiti has had no elected president since that night. Into the vacuum came the gangs. Particularly the Vivre Ensemble Coalition, a federation of armed groups that by 2026 controls the port, most arterial roads, and more than 80% of Port-au-Prince. Kenny Barbecue Cherizier, the former police officer who leads the G9 family, one of the gangs in the Vivre Ensemble Coalition, has given interviews from his controlled neighborhoods. He speaks about the Haitian poor. He speaks about historical injustice. He is also responsible for massacres. The two things are simultaneously true, and that is part of what makes Haiti's collapse so difficult to comprehend from the outside. Grand Griff operates in the Artibonite Valley. On March 31, 2026, its members killed 16 people and drove thousands from their homes. The Artibonite Valley is where Haiti grows its rice. If you control the valley, you control food access. A Kenya-led multinational security mission, authorized by the UN Security Council, funded largely by the United States, has been operating in Haiti since 2024. Its mandate is to restore order enough for elections to be held. It has struggled to gain meaningful ground. The gangs are well armed, largely with weapons that originate in the United States, purchased legally, transported across the water. 17 miles of Caribbean Sea separate Haiti from the Dominican Republic. Less than 700 miles separate Port-au-Prince from Miami. The international community that created the conditions for Haiti's collapse, through the indemnity, through the occupation, through the mismanaged aid response, through the cholera outbreak, through the political interventions, is now spending money to stabilize a country it helped destabilize. This is not cynicism. This is the documented sequence of events. The receipts, as with the indemnity, exist. The question that hangs over Haiti in 2026 is not a new question. It is the same question that has hung over Haiti since 1804. What does a country owe to the people who freed themselves from the worst thing humanity has ever invented, built a republic in the middle of an ocean, paid their oppressors ransom for a century, survived two occupations, and are somehow still here? France has never paid it back. The United Nations has never paid it back. The international community that pledged billions after 2010 never fully paid it back. The question of whether they should, whether a moral debt is a debt, whether a historical wrong creates a current obligation, is one that the Artibonite Valley will answer for you with a number of its own. 16, the number killed on March 31, 2026. In the valley where Haiti grows its food, in the first black republic, in the country that has never stopped paying, was the failure of Haiti the inevitable result of internal choices, or the predictable outcome of a system designed from 1825 onward to make failure the only option?